Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams, the Knoxville News Sentinel. And John and I are back from a little bit of a break. We've been on furlough or on vacation for seemingly here the last few weeks. It's our first time getting together for a podcast. How's everything going, John?
Going well. Sorry to leave South Dakota, though. No COVID-19 there.
They've kind of adopted you as an unofficial resident of the state here lately.
Well, I've been to South Dakota, North Dakota, Wyoming twice, Idaho, Montana, Utah. Great country out there.
While we were away, development for Tennessee football surrounds Jay Graham. Hit with a recruiting penalty for a situation that unfolded while he was an assistant coach at Texas A&M. Of course, Jeremy Pruitt hired Graham, the former the Tennessee Vols player. You know, he's back at his alma mater. Pruitt hired him away from Texas A&M this offseason. But this recruiting violation stems from an incident that occurred while Graham was on staff at A&M. He gets a six-month recruiting penalty. Basically, he won't be able to do off-campus contacts during this recruiting calendar. John, big deal, not a big deal. What was your reaction to this NCAA ruling?
Well, when I hear show cause, I think big deal. Yet, this doesn't really seem to be a big deal. I just have such a hard – I've always had a hard time reading the NCAA, I guess. But I thought show cause, big deal. Death penalty, that's a big deal, which we don't hear anymore. But show cause, I think a big deal. But I mean, Tennessee hired him.
Right, and Tennessee said in its statement after the NCAA's ruling that they were aware of this situation, and they vetted it out when they were in the process of hiring, interviewing Graham. So it sounds like Tennessee wasn't caught by surprise. And I just want to go over, what the situation entailed. This was an NCAA Level 2 violation involving Jay Graham and Jimbo Fisher, the head coach at Texas A&M. They visited a prospect at the prospect school in January 2019 before completion of the prospect's junior year. NCAA bylaws do not permit off-campus visits before July 1st following completion of the prospect's junior year. So clearly a violation of NCAA rules. And the NCAA found that Graham and Fisher met with the prospect in his high school coach's office for about 15 to 20 minutes to express Texas A&M's interest in this prospect. You know, what I think is interesting about this and in a possible way that Tennessee can spin this is, Jay Graham wasn't on this recruiting visit solo. He was there with Jimbo Fisher. And so, one line of thought here could be, hey, just following the marching orders of the head coach, the assistant coach was just along for the ride.
That's a good point. And I guess, that to me makes it more serious from Fisher's standpoint that if his assistant did that, he's the man in charge. It's more serious on Fisher's part. But A&M I didn't see any big deal from that A&M was so upset about this. So I don't know. And Tennessee didn't seem to be upset about it. Was very happy to have Jay Graham, who might have more street cred now that he's had a brush with the NCAA law.
Yeah, it's interesting. Graham has been he was expected to be a valuable recruiter when he joined Pruitt's staff. I think that was part of the thought process for the way Pruitt approached some of his offseason hires. Was he was losing some coaches with more experience, and I think the thought was replacing them with coaches that maybe he hoped could be valuable recruiters. And Jay Graham, I thought he was getting someone who could kind of attack it on both fronts, because Graham has some pretty good experience in coaching SEC running backs, but also, he's been a pretty good recruiter throughout his career. And I think at Tennessee in particular, there was the hope that he could help Tennessee recruit a little bit more strongly in the state of North Carolina, a state that, hadn't produced a lot of recruits during the Pruitt era up to this point. Of course, Jay Graham from North Carolina, and he's been the primary recruiter on a couple players committed to Tennessee's 2021 class from the state of North Carolina, and five commitments overall to the 2021 class have Jay Graham as the primary recruiter. So, you know, he's been an effective recruiter since joining the staff. And I don't think just because he's pulled off the road in one cycle, you know, I think you can live with that. He can still do evaluations. He can still do stuff on campus. It means you have one fewer guy on the road, you know, throughout the late November, early December, during the push toward the December signing period. But I mean, by and large, that's kind of the upshot of this penalty is Tennessee's going to have one fewer recruiter on the road for a few weeks span.
Well, I think, I mean, when Tennessee made the hire, I thought it was a great hire. And I don't think that much, it means that much that he had the violation at Texas A&M. It just, I mean, I just haven't read much or heard much that indicates that it's a big deal. I mean, again, though, that contradicts with my image of a show cause. That usually means, hey, this is serious stuff. I go back from a Tennessee angle. I mean, Bruce Pearl had a show cause. Pretty serious deal. But do you think it's harder to evaluate the NCAA now than it used to be in terms of the NCAA's relationship with universities, the NCAA as an enforcer? I mean, do the same rules apply as usual or not?
Well, certainly the enforcement, I feel like, has shown to have an inconsistent track record, I think, from the NCAA. And I think part of it is, what can they really prove? You know, it's not a matter of what we think happened in some of these cases. It's a matter of what can the NCAA actually prove that happened. I mean, you know, you saw an instance with Missouri's penalty from its academic fraud situation. I think some people thought Missouri's academic fraud was lesser in compared to the allegations that North Carolina and maybe some others have faced, but yet, you know, Missouri got hit with a pretty stiff penalty. But I think the issue for Missouri there was that the tutor who engaged in the fraud, I mean, blew the whistle on herself, basically. And so it's kind of an open and shut case. Like, there was really no denying that it happened when the tutor said, yeah, it happened. And he, you know, and so I think that was a case of what Missouri did maybe paled in comparison to the allegations of some other places, but it was real easy for the NCAA to prove that fraud did occur at Missouri with, you know, with the tutor's cooperation. And I think that's what kind of gets lost sometimes is that, you know, the NCAA's penalties are so much tied up in what they actually can prove happened. And so much of that is supposed to involve cooperation from the schools and kind of policing themselves and being upfront about this. But I think now you could see going forward, some schools see very little motivation to participate in that policing and blowing the whistle on themselves because they think, well, hey, if you can't prove it, then there will be no penalties.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because I think now if you look at it, why confess? Why make a confession? Because it's unlikely the NCAA has I don't know if it has a desire. Maybe it has a desire, but it doesn't have the resources now to prove it. So what's the real point of doing that? I'm sure that's what Missouri's taken from this.
Yeah, and looking back at Jay Graham, John, I'd mentioned that when he was hired, I think there was some thought that he would help Tennessee recruit in North Carolina. That's been mentioned as a state that could become more important or should become more important to Tennessee in recruiting. You know, I mean, Tennessee's in a pretty good spot geographically, I feel like, for recruiting. You know, no, maybe not as good of a spot as, say, University of Georgia or some others. Maybe a school in Florida where so much talent comes out of the states of Georgia and Florida. But I really feel like, and people have made this argument over the years of why Tennessee should be a prominent program, because geographically recruiting, Tennessee is within, you know, 4 hours of so many metropolitan areas. And, you know, I've felt like that North Carolina and the Charlotte metro area is an area that they could improve in terms of recruiting. Do you think that's an important state for Tennessee, or do you think it really should just be more so all eggs in the Georgia and Alabama basket?
No, I believe very much in regional recruiting in Tennessee's case, because you talk about even going into Ohio, you're a 4-hour drive from Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
You're a 4-hour drive from Charlotte. Closer to the way Mike Wilson, our colleague, drives, you're close. I mean, you're 3 hours from Atlanta. We always talk about Memphis because it's part of the state, yet that's far flung compared to these other cities, which in fact produce more 4 and 5 stars than Memphis does. So yeah, I think it's really important. I think something else you have to weigh, and why you need a really strong recruiter when you're recruiting North Carolina, South Carolina too. South Carolina puts out maybe not the same number, but they put out a lot of really good players. In North Carolina now, I think it's tougher because of what Mac Brown has done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's had one season there. But his class is 24/7 composite is ranked higher than Tennessee's right now. It's number 3, and it's as much of it. When you look at traditions of program, it's a real outlier when you look at that top 10 and see North Carolina. But it's not an outlier when you look at Mac Brown, because Mac Brown did it at North Carolina once before. He did it at Texas, of course, which looks even better now the way Texas has performed recently in recruiting and on the field. So I think it's a real challenge, but I think Tennessee has to meet that challenge head on, because it's going to have tough challenges in all those areas.
Yeah, let's take a – you mentioned the 24/7 composite team rankings in recruiting for the 2021 class. Let's take a look at that, because, you know, I always mention in the spring that it's really too early to pay too much weight to those team rankings. But now we've shifted here to midsummer, and I think it's really around the time where you can start to take those team rankings seriously as teams gear up for the fall push before that December signing period. And taking a look at those composite rankings, it's interesting, because you would expect maybe the SEC, we've come to expect the SEC to dominate so much of the recruiting rankings. But you look at it right now, and I'll just run down the top 10. You have Ohio State, Clemson, North Carolina, Tennessee sitting at number 4, LSU, Oregon, Southern Cal, Michigan, Florida, and Texas. So there's only 3 SEC schools in the top 10, and Tennessee's leading the way there. Still, they've slipped a couple rungs. We thought that would happen because part of their early recruiting ranking was due to having so many commitments so early. We knew they were going to fall back a little bit, but they're still holding on to the top 5 spot, and they're still leading the pack for the SEC. I mean, at this juncture, John, I guess, how much weight – I mean, I've kind of tipped my hand, I guess, but how much weight do you think we should lend to the fact that Tennessee's still sitting there in the top 5 of these recruiting rankings?
I place a lot of significance on that, Blake. And don't get me wrong, I don't think Tennessee will finish ahead of LSU, Alabama, and Georgia in recruiting. And I think all 3 of those schools could be in the top 5, and they're all SEC schools. Georgia and Alabama and LSU, to a degree, all started out a little slowly. You know, you take note of their percentage of 4 and 5 stars, and with how much more of the class they have to fill, and you just can assume they're going to move up. You base that also on their track record. But here's the thing that's so impressive to me about Tennessee. If you look at the programs in the top 10 and go back, look at the programs in the top 20, what Tennessee has done, Tennessee hadn't had a 10-win season since 2007. You compare that with the competition. You're competing against schools that are competing, that are in the running for national championships routinely now. To me, that's quite an accomplishment to Tennessee. I'm amazed it's done that well. So if Tennessee drops down to what it finished last year, it finished, what, 10th in the 24/7 composite, I think?
Yeah, 2020, they were 10th. You're correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, if you finish 10th, to me, that's tremendous.
Well, and I was going to ask you about that. I mean, how should we define success by this 2021 class? Because I think there are some fans out there that aren't going to be satisfied by another 10th place finish in the recruiting rankings this cycle. I think, you know, there's some expectation that Tennessee gets some more five stars, that they finish higher in the rankings than 10th, because, you know, part of the problem with finishing 10th is in the rankings, as you kind of alluded to earlier, is, you know, some of these SEC schools that you're ahead of right now, you might wind up trailing in 10th and overall could put you about 6th or 7th in the SEC. So where do you think Tennessee, they're sitting at 4th now, where does this class need to finish to be considered a successful recruiting class? Is top 10 still okay, or would you say it needs to be a little higher than that?
To me, top 10 is fine. It may not be to some fans, but I think if you give Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt and his staff a little more time, if it can recruit this well at when it's going 8-5, put a 10-win season in there, and to me it should recruit even better. You know, when you go in there and you're 4-8 and 5-7, as Tennessee has been, you're selling playing time, because you can definitely say, hey, you're not going to start for Alabama. You can come in here, top flight recruit. You can sell them on playing time being available. I think less so now that Tennessee's built up something with the Jeremy Pruitt. So you're having to sell more on merit and a little bit more on still on a vision of success. I think Tennessee's been able to do that.
One thing I also think about when I think about recruiting rankings, I think the team rankings are important. I don't think they're the end all be all, but I do think they're an important measuring stick. I think another thing that I look at is how many five-star recruits did you sign in a class? Because, you know, a lot of SEC schools, a lot of prominent Power Five schools, they're going to have a lot of four-star prospects in their class. I mean, it's not much trouble for a lot of these prominent programs to sign a ton of four-star prospects. And so I think sometimes what really separates a class for me, and maybe it only helps so much in the team rankings, but I think it is a kind of an X factor for the class, is how many five-stars did you sign? And right now, in terms of the composite rankings, you know, not looking at various individual services, but in terms of composite, Tennessee's got one five-star committed right now. That's outside linebacker Terrence Lewis from Miami, Florida, number one ranked outside linebacker in this class. Dylan Brooks is awfully close on that composite ranking, the defensive end from state of Alabama. He is ranked as the number one player at weak side defensive end. And so, you know, even though he's not technically a five-star, he's awfully close. You could almost put him in there for that discussion. And I think if Tennessee can get one more of that caliber, you know, then for me, you know, whether it finishes 7th or 8th or 9th or wherever in the recruiting rankings, I give it a little bit more leniency there, because you've added another five-star to your recruiting class. And I think that's why I look back at that recruiting class from a couple years ago and think that it was such a strong class for Jeremy Pruitt, was partially because he was able to get two five-star offensive linemen in Wanya Morris and Darnell Wright. I mean, there's something to be said for addressing your needs and loading up with a ton of four stars. You need to do all that. But I think to really have a class that you can feel really, really good about, you've got to have multiple five stars in that class.
Well, that's very valid. You look at what Alabama does, Georgia does, Ohio State, certainly Clemson. And let's take it a step further. You get a player like that, a quarterback. I've used this example for the last 10 years, but the difference Cam Newton made for Auburn, and I think there are 15, maybe 20 programs that could have won a national championship that year with Cam Newton at quarterback. You get that kind of player at that position. And he may not be a five-star when you sign him. That's no guarantee. It doesn't matter what he's ranked coming out of high school if he turns into that.
All right, John, good to have you back. South Dakota is going to have to fight for you to keep you. We're not going to let you go away easily.
Hell, I appreciate that.
All right, well, thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.